And, of course, this is Linda Moulton Howe's night. As she continues with her incredible story, up next we'll talk about Paperclip and what that was all about, bringing in these scientists. But there was another motive, too. That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, and of course, Linda Moulton Howe, as she continues this series of reports that are absolutely staggering, Linda.
Yes, and I think really, truly, our history is beginning to come into focus, and that Operation Paperclip was the OSS, that's the American Office of Strategic Services. That was their program in which more than 1,500 German scientists, engineers, technicians were brought to the United States from Nazi Germany and other countries after World War II ended. White Sands Proving Ground in southern New Mexico was an assignment for many of them because the United States wanted a rocket program like Germany's, even if it meant dealing with non-humans. Because you have to assume that what Bill Tompkins is talking about is when he worked from the 40s on, and he knew it then. So a lot of people knew, even if they were keeping their mouths shut. And the United States also wanted to have those valuable German minds in America and not going to the Soviet Union or other perceived competitors. There was the Joint Intelligence Objectives Agency, known as the JIOA. It began signing up German scientists and transporting them to the United States after the Allied victory in Europe was declared on May 8, 1945. But President Harry Truman did not formally execute Operation Paperclip orders until August that year. And in his orders, President Truman excluded anyone who had been a member of the Nazi Party and its associations. But that rule would have excluded the brilliant rocket scientists Wernher von Braun, Kurt Debus, and Arthur Rudolph. So in spite of Truman's order, the JIOA created false employment and political biographies for those scientists in order to get rid of their Nazi backgrounds. Now, Bill Tompkins was asked to work for Kurt Debus and says the Nazi reptilian and Nordic original takeover plans continued right into the land of the free and home of the brave. As sci-fi as it sounds, Mr. Tompkins says he even saw photographs of Neil Armstrong's landing on the moon where reptilian humanoids were waiting, but no one in the public and media saw that closed circuit delayed video from NASA. Here, continuing with his own first-hand experiences in Navy engineering, is William Tompkins from San Diego.
And Paperclip was initiated by the U.S. government, mostly personnel from here getting into Germany after the war and picking up all of this equipment and bringing it to the United States, and then some of it goes to Russia. But 80% of it had already been removed, so we got the leftovers. Yes, we got von Braun, and hundreds of German scientists were brought here, and they infiltrated your aerospace and your advanced medical system companies. They continued the German mission of getting to the moon with the Apollo vehicle, and then planning on going out into the galaxy. Except the reptilians were already there. They already had facilities there. And there were many other extraterrestrial civilizations working on their moon. It's not your moon, and it's not even a moon.
Do you know for a fact which one of these extraterrestrials manufactured our moon and put it in position?
I don't know. I think that's another one of our questions that we need to get an answer to. It doesn't rotate. It stays there looking at planet Earth. It's a vehicle for control. So when we got to the moon, the astronauts took their cameras and rotated all the way around, 360 degrees, looking out at the rim of the crater. you never saw the enormous vehicles parked above the crater. You also didn't see the reptilians standing on the surface underneath their vehicles, giving the astronauts the finger.
Hmm. Reptilian humanoids? Were they literally raising their middle third finger? Because humans would understand that was F-U?
I'm sure that's what it was.
Well, did anybody show you a photograph of the reptilians on the moon?
What we saw were numbers of vehicles, very, very large. And so, yeah, we got there, but then we got chopped off again. It's for their missions, not ours. It isn't our planet. The planet belongs to them. It's a laboratory, and it's their laboratory.
But who is the there that owns Earth?
You're back to the $64 question again. We're dealing with thousands of extraterrestrials. So it's probably a collective. But certainly the Dracos and the reptilians are part of that control, but it's not specifically their control.
That the Dracos and the reptilians can be defeated by something that is more powerful?
Yes.
And what is that which is more powerful?
There is the various organizations out in the galaxy. We're talking about many galaxies out there, but we don't accept that they have any kind of control over us. But we do have numerous organizations out there who monitor other stars' planets and other stars' military aggression against other stars. But we have, unfortunately, many other species out there who are operating slave organizations. They benefit for using slavery.
Why would the reptilians need humans to do this?
Good question. They had found that the human Aryan type were brilliant, in some cases far more than their own species. And they wanted to modify themselves to something as a combination between a reptilian and a human as far as they could. That program was also going where what they were doing here in the United States and other parts of the planet, they were abducting humans and then interbreeding with different species. This has been going on for hundreds of years by other extraterrestrial and reptilians. They would then be operating out in the galaxy, taking over stars, planets, and make slaves out of them. And they then would expand the Aryan races out in the galaxy. This was part of the specific space missions using the reptilians' vehicles. So what we're stuck with is that we have possibly 100 different types of humanoid extraterrestrials here. Some of them are nice people and are helping us. Many of them are just like what Hitler dealt with, taking the wrong approach, but working with the reptilian Draco-type extraterrestrials. And taking over is not just to take over planet Earth and make it a slave planet, but going out into the galaxy, other stars, planets, and do the same thing. Slavery.
Okay, so we have 100 different types of non-humans coming and going from other solar systems throughout the Milky Way galaxy, maybe even from other galaxies that are interacting with this planet. And we have been living on a concocted planet in which for at least 5,000 years since the beginning of alleged Mesopotamian Anunnaki, that we have been told that we're alone in the universe, which has been a big lie. Can you explain what the relationship is between the Anunnaki, Enlil, Enki, the Titans versus Zeus Greeks in relationship to this whole big picture of competing geopolitical, territorial, extraterrestrial groups? Who, in Anunnaki terms, were those reptilians? Were they Nordics? Or were they extraterrestrial biological grays?
You're asking an extremely good question. And I think that as we can better understand our own real history, which we're still trying to figure it out, and actually that's the question that you're asking, because we have been lied to for, as you said, over 5,000 years of our history. So this goes back to where the kings and the queens and the prince and the princess of different countries back then continually had sexual relations with other countries, continually creating more of the Aryan race.
Right.
And this has been going on for eons.
Eons of harvesting genetic material from humans and animals on Earth to make hybrids, clones, and worker bee androids for non-humans. That was first discussed by people experiencing alien intelligences in the human abduction syndrome. Abductee Jim Sparks told me, quote, "The aliens harvest DNA from us to make other life forms and body parts, the way humans manufacture cars and auto parts," close quote. If that's what the reptilian humanoids are doing, it would explain animal mutilations around the world in which the ears, eyes, tongues, jaw flesh, genitals, rectums, and internal organs are excised without blood and no signs of struggle or tracks around the dead animals. Parallel to the animal mutilations would be humans that are abducted for sperm and egg collection, but the humans are handled differently, being returned alive, even if their minds and memories have been altered to forget what happened. When I produced the May 1980 television documentary, A Strange Harvest, about worldwide animal mutilations, sheriffs and deputies told me off the record that, quote, the perpetrators were creatures from outer space, close quote. In my recent interview with Tom DeLong, I ask him what his military and intelligence group of advisors say is the reason the so-called gods or others are now and have been for centuries mutilating large and small animals around the earth.
I don't have the reason, but I have been given that it is true. Animal mutilations are happening because of the UFO phenomenon. I have not been given a reason why. Whether it's nourishment, whether it's scientific cloning experiments, whether it's just to scare us by dropping the carcass, you know, in the damnedest of places, I don't know.
Or harvesting genetic material to create all of the body containers that they use.
Which would make a lot of sense. Studying this stuff, as long as you have, as long as I have, anything's possible. But I have been told that it is from the UFO phenomenon. That's exactly what was told to me.
And George, I had one long conversation with a person who would be in the off-the-record whistleblower category back in December of 1999. And it's amazing when I think about that conversation that stunned me then, how much of it is in these reports that I am sharing tonight coming from, for example, I think that Bill Tompkins is the real deal and is really telling the truth, because as he says, you know, I'm going to be 93 and everybody should have the truth. Well, back in December of 1999, a meeting had been set up with me with a Defense Intelligence Agency analyst who had seen some sections of my third book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, and it related to work that he had done for the DIA, and he wanted to ask me questions because they're so compartmentalized. And he said that he knew that there is an Earth secret war between three geopolitical, territorial, non-human intelligences in conflict, which is also what Tom DeLong is talking about. And the DIA guy said there were Nordics, reptilians, and the gray Ebens. He said they fight each other with manipulation of time, minds, and three-dimensional holographic projections. And that was the first time that I heard from a U.S. government insider that he knew about the cloning technology that abductees call the resurrection technology that could create any shape and type of body containers that could then be entered and controlled by enemies or allies, but that you would then need a detection technology to be able to tell which player was in which body. Even then, you might not know for sure the truth about friendly or unfriendly. Now, I remember that my reaction to those words back in December 1999, this was before 9/11, was listening with respect, but I think that for a long time I thought it can't be true. And now it's 2016, and coming from every direction are more and more pieces that are supporting the large picture that he gave me in December 1999. And he said at the time that events were coming that he and his people in the DIA seemed to have some knowledge, that events were going to come in which the world was going to be changed forever. I remember when Philip Corso, in the release of his 1997 book in Roswell, he said that an ET communicated to him telepathically, a new world is coming if you can take it.
Good job, Linda. And, of course, we've got one more report coming up, and this has to do with more of these mutilations.
Yeah, it ties directly to a harvest in order to make containers and body parts that people in the abduction syndrome have been talking about for a long time, but I don't think people had the context to listen, and maybe today it's changing.
Strange story, isn't it?
Well, it's a strange universe.
My gosh, so many weird things keep happening. Yeah, David Jacobs, and you know David.
Yeah.
He thinks that all of this is very nefarious, very evil, very, very bad. What do you think?
Oh, not all at all. We do have allies. I'm convinced of that. And if you sat across from some of the people that I have seen who will never be able to go on the record and looked in their eyes and hear them say, look, this is difficult. It's extremely complex. It's very hard. But we do have allies. We've had them all the time. But it's an issue of allies versus unfriendlies, as Lynn Buchanan talked about. There are lots of friendlies, and there are some real unfriendlies, and it depends on the techniques, the power, the technologies that are being used. And I really feel strongly, if we humans all knew all of this, I think we'd be stronger. I think the planet would be stronger. I think we humans could grow up, and that whatever it is that they've been worrying about for 60 years, that the world would panic and collapse, I don't think it would happen.
No, I don't think it would happen either. Linda, for people who need to email you, would you give out your email address?
Thank you. It's earthfiles@earthfiles.com. Think of a reporter who files news about the Earth. earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And love to hear from people who may have some experiences that they haven't talked about before, and I can listen confidentially.
And you're going to be at Contact in the Desert next week, aren't you?
Yes, it's really. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm doing two lectures. I'm doing two workshops, four panels, and I'm really looking forward to being there. And I have the direct link at earthfiles.com for speakers and tickets. I really think it's a fantastic conference, and you're going to be there, too.
I sure am. And we're going to come back with more of Linda's investigation in the last hour. It's your phone calls, Conversations with Linda. Well, as Linda was mentioning, I'm going to be at Contact in the Desert next weekend. She'll be there, too. Full details at coasttocoastam.com as well. And then some other major events coming up just in several weeks now in St. Louis for our June 18th live stage show event. That's at coasttocoastam.com in the highlight reel. If you're in that greater area, Illinois, want to come up from the south, come on up. They've still got some tickets going, and then they move into the balcony. So take advantage of that. Full ticket details at coasttocoastam.com in the highlight reel. Then in August, very small stage. It's going to be kind of nice. It's very intimate. A live stage show in Asheville, North Carolina. That's August 27th. Full details there also at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back. This is our final segment with Linda before next hour's Conversations with Linda. So, Linda, let's go to this report, which is just as frightening as all the others.
Well, I don't know. I guess it can be. And I've been studying and investigating animal mutilations for so long, since 1979 when I started on that TV show. And I have been in so many parts of the world by myself, collecting tissue and getting it into containers to get to pathologists. And I'm still here, and it's terrible what happens to the animals.
Oh, my God.
But maybe if we knew the whole bigger picture, we might have some compassion for something that may need what they're taking. But what is ongoing is the animal mutilations. Ever since I started the investigation in September of 1979 as director of special projects at the CBS station in Denver, there's not been 1 year that has gone by without my receiving dozens of animal mutilation reports from somewhere in the planet. And on April 24th, just about a month ago, the UK's Daily Mail headline, quote, "Croydon cat killers, 150 victims across the country. Murderer thought to have now struck in four counties outside London after a string of similar attacks on pets in which dozens of cat corpses have been found since October 2015 with severed heads," close quote. Well, 2 days later, the Washington Post in the United States headlined, quote, "This is the stuff of nightmares. Sadistic cat killer terrorizes London pet owners." Now, the UK's People for Ethical Treatment of Animals Foundation, known as PETA, is offering a £5,000 reward, that's about $7,000+, for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the person responsible for killing and dismembering cats in Croydon and West Norwood in the London region of southeastern England without blood or tracks anywhere. Croydon Police Detective Sergeant Andy Collin is leading the cat mutilation investigation, and he says the mutilations are, quote, "one of the most bizarre investigations in his 28-year career." Recently, he told the Croydon Advertiser that the animals have been cut with a, quote, "sharp object. It is difficult as the cats are often found at midday," so this is not happening just at night, "and then we have to work out when they were last seen." Now, a group of independent concerned citizens have banded together since September 2015 in a group called SNARL, stands for South Norwood Animal Rescue and Liberty. South Norwood is between London and Croydon. The co-owner and director of SNARL is Boudica Rising, and she told me that she and others in her Norwood region realized the mutilations were happening beyond Croydon, but that the police would investigate serial crimes and not animal abuse cases, and other organizations might investigate some cases but not all of them. So there were investigative gaps that SNARL has tried to fill and are now working closely with Scotland Yard, that joined the animal mutilation investigation in January. here now from South Norwood, England, is SNARL director Boudica Rising.
Trees are very, very similar. So we've now seen probably upwards of 40, and we can tell pretty much immediately without a vet's confirmation whether the body is a road traffic accident victim or whether it's one of the cases. The bodies are always on display, so they're not hidden away. There's never any blood at the scene, and the wounds are very, very clean cuts. So he does a variety of things. For instance, he decapitates. In others, he just takes the tail off. In others, just the head. We've had a couple of half cats cut in half. And we've had cats with the back legs and tail removed. And we had one with the head and front paws removed.
Is there any blood on any of the animals anywhere?
Very little and none at the scene. So he's obviously not killing the cats where he's putting them back. It looks like he's taking them away somewhere.
One UK colleague of mine who has long helped Earth Files with field investigations of animal mutilations and human abductions is 52-year-old Ian Holling from Willersey in the county of Gloucestershire, southwest England. Ian is a computer technician who also manages his own PC support company. I ask him to help with news updates about what SNARL, veterinarians, and police are reporting in the persistent, bloodless, small animal mutilations in Croydon and beyond.
It's been reported that it must be a knife-wielding maniac. Well, we know for a fact that they released the statement that there were no human DNA found, which is another strange aspect to the story. No human DNA.
Well, the news from authorities that no human DNA has been confirmed on at least five cases they've investigated so far contradicts the hypothesis of a deranged individual, doesn't it?
Yes, they've also reported that the cats from the autopsy have been found to have suffered blunt trauma. One of the theories that was going around was that maybe these cats were being deliberately run over. Now, that doesn't really hold water because of the sheer number of cats. When did you last run a cat over? Cats are territorial. They'll stick to a small local area. And they'll be skittish. If you wanted to try and catch a cat that you weren't familiar with or the cat wasn't familiar with you, the cat would probably run away. This is a very populated area. There's lots going on. It's in London. Things are happening all the time. There's people around all the time. There's closed-circuit TV in a lot of the locations around here. What's actually happening is the cats seem to disappear, and then their body is found dismembered, drained of blood, in a public place, sometimes even virtually on the doorstep of the owners. So this is highly strange activity.
People generally ring us because they've found a body or body parts. And some of the cats have been found in very public open spaces. Some have been found in people's gardens. It is obviously quite shocking. So if people discover their own cat, it's quite traumatic. And for people whose cat it isn't, it's still quite a shocking thing. So it's quite emotional.
Have you been able to match any of the separate paws to any of the whole body cats that you've been investigating?
The RSPCA are looking at that at the moment.
Right now you don't have a case of a match?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Is it because that you just started doing this, or is it a possibility that the number of paws would indicate that many more mutilations of cats that you have not found in whole bodies?
Really hard to tell. We think that the paws we've discovered, for instance, there was a cat killed in Bedfont, and that's Bedfont, which is kind of northwest London, west London, and 2 weeks later, a paw that looked like it could have been hers was found in somebody's front garden, placed next to his vehicle. It hadn't been there the night before. So we think that's a possible match, but we won't know until the necropsies are complete.
How many miles between where the body was found and the paw was found?
It was just the same road.
Like?
Within 10 houses.
The population of Croydon is some 370,000 people. I find it very difficult to see how one person can be doing all of this.
It was only about 4 or 5 months ago that there was a major story with photo of a monitor lizard in the Croydon region that was found also slit in its belly, not one drop of blood anywhere, and a royal python snake was found with its belly cleanly slit, no blood.
That is correct. Those animals were found in wooded area. That was to the north of London in St. Albans. So that is on the other side of London. This was a mysterious case. Exotic reptiles discovered dumped bloodless with intestines missing. Very strange.
Like the MO on the cats, the foxes, the birds, and the rabbits.
Yes, and these animals are not native to the UK. One of the things that I did notice about that case was that it was in an area, if we mark it on the map, it falls on a 51.7 degree latitude line, and we do find a lot of high strangeness, particularly animal mutilations and other high strangeness in the UK along this 51.7 latitude mark.
Can you give some examples of some other incidents of high strangeness that have occurred right on that latitude?
Well, the ones that I'm familiar with are two cases of horse mutilations in Wales, one in 2012 and one at the end of last year. They both fall on that line. Also, we had the very famous case in the 1970s of the so-called Welsh Triangle. And coming right the way across the UK in the Cotswolds around Stroud, there's been a lot of high strangeness, including one that we've discussed as well. That was the cat shavings, where cats were disappearing. In these cases, cats were being found with patches of fur missing from their bodies.
Where were the shaved animals found?
They've been found in Gloucestershire, in the central United Kingdom, a couple of villages in the Stroud district.
So not in the Croydon region, much further north, but nevertheless, it's cats and the very fact that there would be bloodless mutilations in southeastern England, and then that there would be these strange repeated shavings of cats further north, means that there is a phenomena that is going on focused on cats that no one can understand, has explained, and no one has been arrested.
Right. Now, with the cats, it's important to note that we've got one case where the cat has been shaved four times. It's returned to its owner with patches of fur missing. That's happened four times. This is ridiculous. Who would do such a thing? That's where a cluster of these shavings have happened in recent times. There's also another area, Tunbridge Wells, where there have also been shaving incidents. That area would perhaps be between Croydon and Stroud.
How could people have the ability to catch a cat, a fox, a rabbit, a bird in the first place without being noticed, and then take it away, mutilate it, return it, place it where it can be found without the person being seen by somebody?
Exactly. This is what is so bizarre. By the way, you mentioned the foxes. There is an urban fox population in London. Now, two foxes have been found in a mutilated fashion, and they're talking about birds and rabbits as well. So this is amazing. If you looked at a human scenario of a human catching these animals, it doesn't make sense. Don't forget, in this last report for the last weekend, we've had a report of three cats found decapitated in South London over the weekend alone.
May 7 and 8.
Yeah, three of them in a 10-mile radius, I believe. That is very unusual that the frequency is so much.
Boudicca, what is the one town area that you've had the most repeat mutilations?
It's hard to tell because I'm not convinced we're hearing about all of them yet. We've got clusters in Croydon, we've got clusters in Frimley, and we've got clusters in West London. We've got a cluster in North London.
Hmm. Are these occurring in a regular cycle?
No, they're not. And we've had a couple that have occurred during the day as well. So whilst most of the attacks are occurring at night.
What about Scotland Yard? Are you communicating with them?
Yeah, we're in almost daily communication with them. We're working very closely with them.
Why would Scotland Yard come into the investigation?
Because there's a link between animal killings and mutilations and somebody who do the same thing to humans.
Do they have an insight?
They tend to believe it's one person.
No closed-circuit TV images of anything unusual happening in London, which is full of closed-circuit TV. People are coming and going all the time.
You're making a very important point about the seeming invisibility of the taking and returning of these animals.
That's right, because one would assume if these animals were needed by something, that they would take them and be done with it, dispose of them some other way. But these seem to be just returned for us to find. Why is something toying with us? Someone once said, if there is another intelligence that is working alongside or carrying out these things alongside us, putting a lot of fear in a lot of people, what is the agenda of it all?
God, that was a great, great phrase.
Yeah, and it makes me remember when I was working with Dr. John Altshuler in Denver. He was a hematologist and pathologist and had his own lab. And we worked together from around 88, 89 until his untimely passing from a bicycle accident later in the 90s. But during that period of time, there have been cycles of cat mutilations all over. And even the New York Times did an article back in 1989 about more than 100 cases in Tustin, California and Toronto. And they're the same cycles. I have a list of various cities and provinces and places around the world where the, we'll call it the half cat or small animal mutilations occur, always without blood and no tracks. And Dr. Altshuler was interested in seeing if we could get one of the half cats from an animal organization that was in Vancouver, and they were having a hole. They'd had like 35 half cats in a very short period of time. So I called. We got one transported very quickly. He gets the tissue, gets it under a slide, and there, without question, is cooked hemoglobin, cooked collagen. He called me up, had me come look at the slides. This case is at Earth Files. It's in one of my books. And it showed that in that, the heating of the collagen and heating of the hemoglobin, heat had been applied. But just like the puzzle in the large animals, cattle and horses and dogs and sheep and goats and so forth, when he looked under a microscope at those excisions, he could never find carbon residue, which looks like black grains of pepper. And the same thing applied to the half cat from Vancouver. And I've never forgotten it either, because the front half of the cat was there. And you feel like, is this being done deliberately to taunt, to frighten, as you were raising that question? Or is there something going on with this alien presence that in it and of itself is used to harvesting from this planet? If what we heard in the previous 3.5 hours is beginning to point in the right direction of how big and complex the puzzle history of Earth is in relationship to all kinds of other intelligences, what we perceive as being something horrific, an animal mutilation, might be just par for the course going to a supermarket for them. That is part of what I think that when a rancher said to me, look, if we've got extraterrestrials mutilating my expensive Angus, I don't mind if we can do a trade and they can give me something I can barter for on this planet where we use money.
Well, of course, they don't give him anything back, Linda. Okay, next up, Conversations with Linda, your calls.